can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman. Superman.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fundamentals podcast. I am your host, Harley. Joining me on this episode, the fourth episode in the sitcom summer series, its returning guest, Rotten Tomatoes approved critic and one half of the Ramblin' and Amblin' podcast, it's Andrew Godian. Andrew very kindly agreed to come back onto the show to talk with me about a personal favourite sitcom, and that is, of course, Scrubs. Running from 2001 to 2010, during its 9 seasons, it showcased the lives of a group of nurses and doctors in the hospital known as Sacred Heart. It's a show that's known for its dramatic pathos, as well as a bunch of wacky antics and crazy fantasies. And of course, we get into all of that in this discussion. So, without further ado, let's get to the episode. This is Scrubs with Andrew Godian. Hello, Andy, and welcome back to the Fundamentals podcast.
It's an absolute joy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure, mate. And I'm glad you've reached out to me during this little sitcom summer series that I'm doing. And you've brought one of my personal favourites to the show, so I'm really, really excited to talk about this, and that is Scrubs.
Yeah, baby.
So I just want to ask straight away, you know, when did you first see Scrubs, and why did you bring it to this series?
I was thinking, like, I assumed this would be a question that was going to come up, so I was trying to wrap my brain as to when the first episode kind of got put in front of me, and I think it was when, because I know it always used to be on Channel 4, E4 even after school. So that was probably the way I used to watch most of it. But I think the first time I watched it was Sky used to have a ABC channel. It's a long defunct now. And that used to have stuff like Home Improvement and 8 Simple Rules. And Scrubs was one of the main shows on that as well. I think it was on that I first saw it. And it would have been, I remember seeing it from the start rather than kind of diving in at a random midpoint. So I'm pretty sure I saw it effectively beginning to end when I first discovered it. Although even saying that, I remember having to wait for ages for the likes of season 7 and season 8 in particular to get to the UK. I remember that being a long wait.
Yeah, man. I had a very similar experience. I think because you and I are in the same sort of age bracket, and yeah, that was similar for me, man. I remember mates at school talking about this show all the time and thinking, what is this? And then, yeah, it was on E4 in the afternoons. So I thought, okay, I'll watch a couple episodes, and just fell in love with it. It was just absolutely brilliant. Like you said, it took us ages to get the final season. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, isn't it? Why did you bring it to us today? What is it that makes this an absolute standout show for you?
So particularly in the last, it's always been one of the shows since I did start watching it and started buying the DVD box set. So it would always just be a good one to come back to, either it's just kind of like a comfort watch or something that you know that you're going to have a nice familiarity with, and you can do something else whilst that plays in the background. And it's quite a nice, comforting blanket to have on at any given time. And it's continued to kind of play like that from like my early teens, like particularly, as with many of us in lockdown, I'm sure we picked up many a box set of new shows and old shows. And this was one I went back to initially because of Zach Braff and Donald Faison starting the rewatch podcast, Fake Doctors Real Friends. So I very much went into it like, yeah, cool, I'll watch it at pace with the guys as they do the podcast. But as soon as it started, I burnt through the 8 seasons pretty quickly. I want to say in the space of about 3 weeks.
I did exactly the same thing. That's the problem with these rewatch podcasts. It's the same with the Office Ladies one. Like, it's like you said, it's a nice idea doing an episode a week, but you're right, like I think particularly now the kind of, you know, quote unquote binge watch culture that is around, and 20 minute episodes of comedies that you love,
you want a little more.
Yeah, yeah. So I totally agree, man. And I want to say straight away, I don't know about you, I feel like this is one of those sitcoms that it has so much heart and sort of darkness in it as much as it does light and sort of humor.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one reason why it's so popular, because it just, it hits, when it wants to hit a point, a dramatic point, it really hits it home.
Yeah, it's one of those rare sitcom shows that manages to walk that tightrope between very daft and very silly, and then literally within the space of 30 seconds in the next scene, it hits you with a emotional wallop within a certain story arc or with certain characters. And the way it manages to kind of like shift, make that shift without ever really feeling like tonal whiplash is nuts. And that, like, the only way I can kind of see why that works is that there is so much commitment to character and the writing, both within the silly moments and the emotional moments, where they both still feel quite organically speaking towards those characters. And it's like quite a rich cast of characters as well, from both the main, your main lot of JD and Elliot and Turk and Carla, and then getting a bit more on the periphery with Dr. Cox and Dr. Kelso. And then there's this whole bevy of secondary to even background characters who end up filling up the kind of identity and kind of where the laughs and the more dramatic beats can come from. It's incredibly rich in terms of its characters, and always seems in service of taking them somewhere interesting and never really shortchanging them, that, like, even within the silly moments, they feel part of everyone's personality.
Absolutely. And I guess it kind of makes sense as well, being that it's set in a hospital. And, you know, I remember one episode in particular where they kind of took it head on a little bit, and they talk about how doctors and how people sort of deal with the weight and the gravity of things they have to do. And like, some of them would make jokes, and and I can't remember which character, one character almost starts to take issue with it and is like, oh, isn't this a bit much? And they're like, no, like, this is just, you've got to deal with this stuff all day. So like, some people laugh, some people need to go cry, some people need to do whatever to get out of their system. And it's like, it's, if you're in that environment all the time, you know, it can't just be super serious all the time. You know, it has to be a bit fun. And I feel like this is one of those shows that it pays close attention to the medical stuff as much as it can. You know, like you said, the behind the scenes podcast has been really enlightening, because they talk about the writer's process, and like, they'd have people on board. And I didn't know for years that there's a real JD. Like, there's a real doctor friend.
Bill Lawrence's old college roommate, I think.
Yeah. which is awesome.
What a tribute from your best mate to write a whole sitcom based on you. We would all be so lucky.
I know, right? But it just shows you that, like, that's how seriously they took this. But I love that. And that's something I really enjoyed about it a lot, especially like the wacky, silly fantasies and humor, because it just sort of took the edge off of something that could have been very morbid.
Yeah, you know? I think you think that, like, as an easy comparison, and it's something that even Scrubs makes a joke of in later seasons, is the kind of how Grey's Anatomy is something that is the really, like, sincere flip side to this, of what if Scrubs just played it straight. And and that is exactly kind of what it plays like. Part of it would slightly feel, because Grey's Anatomy feels very almost soap opera-esque in terms of the way it kind of deals with the big blows of emotion and big character arcs. Whilst as Scrubs, even though it's got fantasies, it feels a lot more human than something like Grey's Anatomy, because everyone does feel like they're acting in what is quite a believable depiction of a small district hospital in somewhere in America. And I even think back to, like, this is one of the first shows, the first thing ever that kind of taught me that health services work differently in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And that the American system is so built up on someone's kind of insurance and how much that will hinge on whether they're actually going to get the right care or not. And how much a lot of these characters are dedicated to trying to find a way to make what is inherently a absolutely mad system work for them to best treat as many people as they can, which is a big part of why throughout this whole show, even if some of the humor might feel a bit cynical at times, it's always has its heart in that right place, like you were saying. And I think that medical side of it is a big part of that.
100%. And I think, I can't remember who, but I'm pretty sure some medical board voted this as like the most accurate TV show medical drama, which is hilarious when you think about it. But the reason why is like, fantasies aside, it's grounded in reality. And like you said, the way that they have to operate the social structures within the hospitals, they talk about, they're like, yeah, they've got it spot on. Like a lot of the observations are very accurate, which leads me on to some of the characters, really. So I want to know, do you have a favorite character in Scrubs? Because it is hard to pick.
It is hard. Shows like this. It is very hard to pick because there are people who I find like the funniest who maybe not necessarily be my favorite. I think Gun to Head, Dr. Cox is my favorite just because he the best John C. McGinley's ever been in anything, and he's a very good character actor in a lot of things from sitcoms to Oliver Stone movies. But Dr. Cox feels so perfectly you really feel a kind of authorship from the actor in that role, particularly because he's got such like a specific cadence, and he's also responsible for both some of the really funny parts of the show, but also some of the like crushing emotional arcs of like any of the seasons. I know for most Scrubs fans, the kind of pinnacle of the season is season 3 episode with Brendan Fraser. How are we gonna open with saying there's probably gonna be spoilers for Scrubs here?
You know what? This is something I've come up with every episode. So this one will be put out in a few weeks' time. Mm-hmm. Hopefully by now people have got the idea that there are spoilers.
Yeah,
you know, we're talking about these shows. It's gonna be hard to talk about. Exactly. We're going in depth on all of these shows. So you're right. Yeah, that episode in particular, Brendan Fraser, I mean, an amazing guest performance.
Yeah.
But yeah, that his sort of death and how it affects Dr. Cox, that's one of my favorite episodes because it's such a gut punch. Like that last sort of 2 minutes. And just, I think, what is it? What JD says, where he's like, where do you think we are?
Yeah.
So and he turns around and he's
so
like
oh.
And he's gone. And you're like, oh no.
And that Joshua Radin winter song kicks in and it's just.
Yeah.
Crushes me every time I watch an episode. I may not cry at E.T. as rambling fans may know, but I do cry at many an episode of Scrubs.
Yeah, you do have a soul, that's okay.
Yeah.
So now how come you don't have to get all dressed up?
I am dressed up. Did you see any holes in these pants?
No.
I'm glad you made it.
Listen, there's one more thing you have to do for me.
You can't keep me from getting drunk.
You have to forgive yourself for everything that went down the other day.
You're so annoying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
There's your camera, aren't you gonna take some pictures?
Pictures of what?
You know, crying babies covered in chocolate, people singing happy birthday to my son who have never even met him before, you know, the whole routine.
Where do you think we are?
Name is the splinter inside me while I wait.
Yeah, you have to be made of some pretty tough stuff to not feel it on that episode, man. And you're right, they give a lot of that stuff to John C. McGinley, and it makes sense. As you said, he's probably, I think out of all of the cast, he was definitely one of the most experienced. So you probably would give him a good chunk of it.
Yeah, the only other person I can really think of is Donald Faison had done Clueless by that point and was about to do Remember the Titans. But Dr. Kelso, Ken Jenkins, had been in a few things. He's popped up in, like, kind of name any TV show from the US in the 80s and 90s, and he was probably in it at one point or another.
That's true.
But in terms of, like, the rest of the cast, you're right, I'd say, like, particularly JD, this is very much Zach Braff's first big credit, really, and his first time having to lead something, and for it being one of his first breakout roles, that's a lot of pressure.
Oh, big time, big time. But yeah, no, Zach Braff, I think, does an excellent job. I mean, like you said, considering this is his first lead performance, and I imagine, well, I've heard from hearing him talk, like, how terrified he was turning up on this show, and like you said, you've got, like, John C. McGinley opposite you, you know, screaming lines in your face as this sort of grizzled veteran doctor, and you're like, I'm supposed to make a quip or do a thing here, and it's like, and that very scary.
And that really plays quite well to the character in the first season. Like, it really helps it for established Bambi, as it were. This guy who's a bit wide-eyed in the deer in the headlights, as it were.
Absolutely. And but yeah, their relationship, I think, is fascinating, because it's one that's made very apparent within the first season that, like you said, he's looking for a father figure. And
yeah.
And I think Dr. Cox is this kind of almost like reluctant alpha male, you know, guy that's hardened by some pretty nasty experiences in his past that you never really find out fully, but you get the sense it was pretty awful. You know, it's kind of nice in a way, because I've already spoken about this on a few of the episodes I've just recorded, that sitcoms love to give characters good arcs and ground them in, you know, in sort of emotional beats. And of course, that's for us to invest in as the audience. And I feel like he's a really good example of that, Dr. Cox, as someone who starts off very kind of, you know, grizzled, and, like, you know, you don't approach him for anything. And by the end of it, you realize that, you know, he has softened up, and, you know, he's a dad, and he does his best to kind of help people out, even though he still likes to go on the odd rant and you know, push people. It's never from a place of being totally malicious and horrible and bullying them. It's like he pushes people to get the best out of them.
Dr. Cox.
I'm hoping for your sake there's another Dr. Cox sitting right behind me.
I feel stupid, but sending me to Kelso like that, well, I'm not sure exactly what you were trying to teach me.
The value, and this is important, of leaving me alone.
I think we both know there's a little more to it than that.
No, there's not. Look, I want you to go ahead and spread the word, Missy. I've had enough. The next whiny intern that comes in here looking to me for a cookie and a hug, I swear to Aisha, I'm going to hurt them. And you neurotic one-woman freak show, take your blah-blah to the blah-blah-ologist. Because if you are so stupid as to confront the chief of medicine over some quasi-offensive endearment, then you've just got to go ahead and replace the captain of your brain ship, because he's drunk at the wheel.
You're right. I need to learn to pick my battles. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he also emerges as, like, one of the characters with the kind of most anxieties, really, when it comes to think of it, and the most kind of self-destructive of them. I think that there's that arc in season 5 where he blames himself for the death of 3 patients after organ donations gone wrong, where they thought the donor died from a drug overdose, but turned out it was rabies, so everyone's now infected. And that, again, that's one of the best crafted emotional wallops of this whole thing as well, and again, because of how well John C. McGinley plays it. And then, as this show often does, and with a lot of its kind of big arcs, it lets them kind of play out for quite a few episodes. Like, particularly that one, he's kind of drinking and rock bottom the episode after, does kind of get that pep talk, but it's still not fixed within the space of 20 minutes. There's still a kind of hesitant nature from him, and an insecurity to him, once he's back at work in the next, like, 2 to 3 episodes. And the show's great at that, with a lot of different arcs. I even think about particularly Turk and Carla getting married, and then the whole of season 4 basically being about how really difficult a first year of marriage can be for newlyweds. It often, and it even makes the point of this in the episode where it does become a fixed live studio audience sitcom for a beat. It's never a show that is that keen with wrapping up problems within 20 minutes. It gives complex emotions its dues and lets them kind of unfold, and sometimes they unfold in a really messy manner, which just makes it all the more relatable.
Absolutely, yeah, you're right. A lot of the character relationships, I think, in this show are, yeah, relatable. Like you said, it's kind of amazing how they pull a lot of that off. And I mean, speaking of, you kind of touched upon it already. Really, one of the central kind of relationships of the show. It's at the time of recording, I just did Friends yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And we talked about obviously the Ross and Rachel thing is like there's. You've got that will they, won't they throughout. And I've noticed this in a lot of sitcoms. You have the will they, won't they. And then you have like the stable couple.
Yes.
That are in the show. And then you've got like the odd pairing, maybe, you know. And yeah, in this case, it's very much obviously, JD and Elliot are kind of the will they, won't they. And then you've got Turk and Carla are this sort of pretty solid, like they're together pretty much from like the first episode almost.
Yeah.
You know. And then they grow and they become this sturdy couple. But you're right, it's interesting how they write them and that they create conflict and things that are the real. So yeah, I'm curious, what do you make of the Carla and Turk relationship throughout the show?
There's a moment where I think it's season four where they are going for a bit of a rough patch, but it's also one of the moments within their kind of relationship dynamic that really makes you feel like, oh, they're going to be okay because they're just really genuine and lovely with each other. And it's also one of my favorite Donald Faison bits. It's when JD's with Kylie and they're all being lovey-dovey and it's a games night and they're doing an arm wrestling contest. And JD lets Kylie win and he's like, oh, you win. And then the camera pans to Turk and Carla. And Turk just slams Carla's this Dally just goes, do you see what you get, Carla? Do you see what you get when you mess with the warrior?
Carla certainly tried to be as adorable as us.
Oh, darn it, you won.
Unfortunately, Turk wasn't on the same wavelength.
Do you see what you get, Carla? Do you see what you get when you mess with the warrior?
And that moment for me is just like just such a perfect like encapsulation of why their relationship works so well, and so many of JD's just kind of end up in a bit of a wreckage at the end of them. It's just because they're just so true with each other, and that is and that is why when they do go through some tough points, because that, like I said, there's that kind of newlywed anxiety that they go through, and then they have a difficult pregnancy, and Carla gets postpartum depression, so they do go through a lot, but there's a strength and again an authenticity to the way that they're written, and also in just the very natural chemistry that Donald Faison and Judy Reyes has as the characters as well, that I like makes them one of the best, like you say, the kind of solid steadfast couple, sitcom couples.
Absolutely, man. And it's a really sweet pairing as well, because they're both very, like you said, very genuine with each other, and I feel like Donald Faison as Turk is definitely up there as one of my favorites, because he's just so fun and just full of charisma and energy, but he kind of dials it up to 11 just so he can almost like get through what he needs to get through. And like he has, I think one of my favorite moments is quite early on in, I think it might even be the pilot, where, you know, it's comparing obviously him and JD in their first days, and Turk's all like, yeah, it's brilliant, I'm loving it, and then he kind of confesses at the end that like, no, I'm terrified, like I'm telling people open, this is scary, but he kind of dials up his personality to like overcompensate, you know. And it's and they kind of make that joke about this sort of surgeons being like the jocks of the hospital and that, and it's quite a fun little line, and it works well for him. But I like it because, like you said, because then Judy Reyes as Carla kind of brings him down a bit.
Grounds
him and is like, okay, you don't have to show off all the time. You know, you're with me. It's fine. And they're very sweet together. And Carla's kind of like this sort of proud mother hen of the hospital. Mm-hmm. But you can see why he would be attracted to her and why they work so well together.
Yeah. And then, of course, the other great love story of the show is not JD and Elliot, it's JD and Turk.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, and then Carla's got a battle for his attention.
Yeah.
I'm going to be putting in clips of all of these episodes. So at time of recording, the Parks and Rec one is going out tomorrow, and it's clips galore. All the episodes are the same, because it's just so many great moments that we talk about. And, yeah, one of my favourites is definitely when... Turk comes back from his honeymoon and it's this like really long
Turk!
Like they're so excited to see each other and they're just running around the hospital missing each other, and it's such an obvious gag to pull, but it's very funny.
It's so funny,
and it's it's brilliant.
Growl for me, growl.
Turk! Hey!
Go ahead.
Get it!
Maybe someday he'll love me like that.
But that is one of like the important relationships in this show, particularly when
100%.
Like, we were growing up as watching it when we were like in our young teens. It was definitely a kind of a really positive male friendship role model to have growing up, and just seeing these two dudes just being completely and utterly open with the way that they feel about each other. And yeah, it definitely encouraged me to be more emotionally open with a lot of my close friends, for sure.
That's it, yeah. And like listening to the podcast, they talk about how they get a lot of that from the fans. Yeah. That people say, oh, you've taught me to not be this kind of closed off, you know, alpha male or whatever. It's like, it's okay to give my friends a hug and, you know, and be affectionate and be silly.
It's okay to order an apple teeny instead of a beer sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
I'm not sure if you've ever had an apple teeny. It's not great.
No, I haven't. By all accounts, I hear they're terrible. But yeah, but we digress. I mean, I'll still say this. Guy Love is one of the greatest songs ever written.
Let's go! It's Guy Love. Don't compromise the feeling of some other guy. Holding up your heart into the sky. I'll be there to care through all the lows. I'll be there to share the highs. It's guy love between two guys.
In fact, if we're just talking about best episodes, that whole musical episode is phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's like definitely one of the top ones. Really funny, really silly, and yeah, that's if you want to sum up their whole relationship, you just listen to that song. It just kind of sums it up.
That is that is, again, when any kind of discussion over top episodes of Scrubs comes up, that musical one is always in the mix, I think. Again, because like it's kind of like a sitcom trope, but one that I always find very welcome to see whenever someone commits to doing a musical episode, and they commit hard.
Oh, yeah, they go all out, and like I'll say this, every song is a banger.
Yeah.
On that, like, 20 minutes, every song is just like catchy and funny, and they all give it a good go, which I kind of love. But yeah, you're right. Their relationship is it's really sweet as well. And just fun, and like, and it, what's nice about it is they're there for each other every step of the way, and I kind of love how like honest they are,
yeah,
as well with each other at different stages in their life. It's wonderful. I remember there's that sort of later on in the season when JD becomes a dad, you know, and he's kind of he's angry because he's been lied to, and he has all these feelings, and he's fully like expecting Turk to back him up on how he feels about something, and Turk just like, no, you're a dad now, like, you know, I'm a dad. Like, he gives him a hard truth, and it's like that's what a good friend does, that's what a good friend should do. And so like there's lots of moments like that between them, which I think, as much as all the hugs and the silly nicknames they give each other, like there's a genuine friendship and sweetness there.
Yeah, and all in between World's Most Giant Doctor attempts.
Absolutely, man. Another character I'd love to talk about, I think he's he's kind of a dramatic and comedic MVP of the show.
Mm.
Maybe more of a dramatic one is Dr. Bob Kelso.
Yeah. I love
played
Ken
wonderfully
Jenkins.
By Ken Jenkins. I mean, what a guy. I was interested to hear on the podcast, they were talking early on that he was kind of written initially as just this sort of cartoon villain.
Yeah.
You know, of the
Which
show.
Which you can and feel in the pilot, I feel.
Yeah, you definitely feel it. Yeah. And then it's like, as the show goes on, they realize they had a very good dramatic actor on their hand. Because as you said, he's been in everything. They're like, well, he's got tons of experience.
Yeah.
So they throw him a few stories and they're really sweet. And by the end of it, he just has some like cracking one-liners and jokes, but he's also got a lot of heart, and it's nice they kind of humanize him, and you realize that actually he's got one of the toughest jobs being the chief of medicine in that hospital and making lots and lots of really difficult decisions.
Mm-hmm. And the pairing of him and Sam Lloyd as Ted is often like some of the funnier the points where the comedy is at its darkest as well, with the kind of relationship between Kelso and Ted. But the great late Sam Lloyd as well. He's always such incredible value in this show. Like so many of the pratfalls that he does are amazing. I think it's season 3 or season 4 when Richard Kind is suing Turk, and Ted's representing him, and he's sweaty all in the room, and he's about to take the stand and read a statement, and he just puts his hand on the desk and just completely slips and knocks himself unconscious. And it's just one of the most perfect pratfalls I've ever seen on television.
It's so good. Like, should we wait for him? Like, nah, you're better off.
Yeah.
He has so many moments, Ted. Oh, bless him. And yeah, like, their relationship is weirdly antagonistic between him and Bob, but I think he's just someone for Bob to take his frustrations out on.
Yeah. And even that has a nice kind of bow at the end of it, like particularly in Kelso's arc. There's a nice, sweet, genuine moment between them.
Yeah. He gives him a little hug and a little pat on the shoulder and he says, thanks for everything.
Thanks,
and it's very
sincere.
Yeah. But it's cracks me up, the some of their interactions. I'm just thinking about when he says he's going to jump off the roof, you know, and then it's like cuts to him not doing it, and then it's just Bob Kelso at the bottom, just like chicken. That is dark.
One of my favorite memories from first year at uni was there was a kind of Scrubs fiend night at the SU because the Blanks, Sam Lloyd's a cappella band, came and played at the SU. That was a very sweet moment, and particularly to also then realize the friends you were starting to make also all loved Scrubs. So that was a great moment. That was a great live gig to see, because they're so funny as well.
he's such a talent. Yeah, Sam Lloyd, I mean, is absolutely just an amazing talent. As you said, sadly we lost him. I think it was last year.
Just over a year ago, I want to say.
He's so good, like, and all the music stuff, it was all him. So if you're watching the show and you're wondering, it's 100% that's all Sam Lloyd doing all the music and singing, and he's so talented. And I love all the worthless peons in the show.
you always will be a worthless peon, sir. You know my band, the Worthless Peons.
Yeah. It's so good. Like, I think the first time you meet them, they're in an elevator singing like show tunes.
Yeah, and they're like singing all their departments in a cappella. Yeah. Oh, you got promoted.
Yeah. It's about time. Yeah. I'll be putting that in for sure.
Absolutely.
Hey, this is my band. We all work in different departments in the hospital.
Ted, I know you told me last time that we...
Legal...
Accounting...
Shipping and receiving...
On-site property management, including pest control, nighttime security, non-arboreal gardening services, and tenant-related easements and liens.
Hey, you got promoted.
It's about time. He's been busting his hump around here for 6 years.
It's such a great show. And like you said, having those characters bounce off each other is wonderful. One of my favorite things with Bob Kelso is his relationship with Enid. I kind of love how she's like, you never see or hear of his wife.
Yeah.
She's only through him and these ever darker stories. Like every time you hear about her, it just gets worse.
It's so dark. And his gay son, Barry, doing off on his misadventures. Joins the Navy, sets up the cabaret show at one point. That whole trajectory is wild to listen to and try to build a timeline up of what happens to his son.
There's one brilliant story with like Carla's trying to get music played. I think it's by Poison for a band. I'll put the full clip in because I'm not going to do it justice, but... Kelso comes in and like tries to shut it down, and he says something along the lines of like, I'll tell you what I told my son, is like, get a haircut, turn down the music, and stop using my razor to shave your funzo. Hi, Future Harley here. So two things I noticed when I was putting the edit together for this. Firstly, Dr. Kelso's son is actually called Harrison, and second of all, the quote I was on about was from a completely different episode. It's in season 3. It's called My Clean Break. And it's such a good quote, I'm just going to put it in here. It's when Dr. Kelso is basically dressing down Elliot for her new look.
I've let this whole new look thing slide the last few months, but now that your colleagues are beginning to complain, I'm going to give you the same advice I give my son every morning. Lose the makeup, get a haircut, and stop using my razor to shave your fun zone.
He did, like you say, he delivers these lines about his family, like, just with the most deadpan... straight face, and it's just so, it kills you. Like, it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I love it so much. Oh, goodness me. Speaking of other characters, I'm just looking through the cast. Mm. I'd be remiss, of course, if we don't talk about Dr. Elliot Reed.
Yeah.
Not only is Sarah Chalk hilarious, and as people will probably know her from a lot now of her voice acting work, mm-hmm. you know, she's in more and more things these days. But yeah, as Dr. Reed, I think she's wonderful because not only is she hilarious, but I'd love to get your insights on this. I feel like she's also an interesting role model for sort of female doctor, really. And mm-hmm. she goes on this very interesting arc of independence from her parents and all sorts of other things. She seems like a very well-rounded character by the end of it.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, particularly to compare how much people change from like that pilot episode to the finale, and you could make the case that Elliot has the most pronounced growth, because she starts off as this kind of eager to please, not kind of really caring about who she kind of takes out to look the best amongst her peers, and then it's slowly about her kind of learning a bit of humility and kind of recognizing her. A lot of times where she has to recognize her privilege when she talks about the way she was mm-hmm. raised in pretty cozy conditions. And like you say, she goes on this arc where she kind of cuts away the ties that bind, as it were, and finds out who she is a bit more. There's that kind of great makeover bit in season 3 set to American Girl. That's a good needle drop moment of many needle drop moments in this series, and even from then to just kind of figuring out that move in and of itself isn't exactly the right one that she has to make, and then it's where she that then takes her and how she kind of finds more of herself in trying new things and trying out different paths, and because she tries out a number of tries out private practice for a while and then tries going out on her own, and again it doesn't always work, so it's about that kind of reevaluating and readapting, and she has probably the most in that regard, I think, to come away as someone who is much more sure of herself and much more willing to accept her neuroses and let people in as well. That is quite a pronounced arc for her throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Apologies for the dog in the background.
That's all right.
I think he's making it. I don't know if I'm going to keep this
rowdy.
In or not,
no.
yeah, do you know what? That's a nice segue. Yeah, thanks, Hugo. Yeah. Speaking of, absolutely. Let's talk about a taxidermy dog for a few seconds.
The weirdest piece of information about Turk and JD's friendship is that they absolutely adore this taxidermy dog that they've had since med school.
It's so bizarre, isn't it? And
yeah,
there's so much stuff to it. Like, and I love that you get that arc later on where Carla loses him and the janitor brings Steven.
Yeah.
and then they end up with two dogs. And there's that great gag where, like, JD just checks both of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, cuts both of them. And it's like, that one's rowdy. And you're like,
don't ask
what?
Me how I know that.
Look at them standing next to each other. Two beautiful dead dogs.
Now at least you can both have one.
I'm cool with keeping Steven. We've gotten to know each other quite well.
How are we supposed to know who's who?
That's Steven. Don't ask me how I know that.
It's just brilliant. It's like these silly little things that you can almost, you just couldn't see the show without it in a way. but I mean, obviously Dr. Edom and JD have the kind of will they won't they threat.
Yeah, they're the Ross Rachel dynamic.
Yeah, and I feel like, again, I was talking about Friends the other day, it's one of those where you're glad that they end up together at the point that they end up together, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes sense for them to take a few years to get there.
Yeah. And I love that the final season did not make the whole point of the season being about stretching out the will they won't they to, like, have it on the finale like Friends did per se. But what they do is that they actually couple them up within, like, I think it's like the first 4 or 5 episodes of the final season, and then fans get to actually have that time with them where they are a happy couple that have... and to prove that they're getting together at the right point of time in their life, which a lot of sitcoms don't quite grant you.
That's so true. And of course, we talk about the final season, we're talking about the 8th season.
Because, the 8th season, yes, you should make that caveat. That's
there were only 8 seasons. while we're on it, I'm curious, did you watch the 9th? Did you watch it?
I did when it first came out. Way back, when was that? Like 2009, 2010? Something like that.
2010 I've got here. Yeah.
And I watched the first 2 or 3 the other day, just out of curiosity ahead of doing this. And I remember not really liking it at the time, but feeling it kind of got a bit of a groove. But particularly the first episode of season 9 is rough. The kind of like repilot, it's very awkward, and a lot of very kind of ham-fisted references and kind of jokes, and kind of the certain way characters are acting, it feels a bit more kind of on a novelty basis rather than actual kind of being a organic thing. And it rarely made sense to me even at the time that they would go on and do that 9th season, because one, the ratings have been steadily dropping off for like the past 4 years, and to the point where a lot of the seasons were at a juncture where they didn't know if they were going to be coming back for like season 6 or season 7 or even season 8. And then they use season 8, and the finale of season 8 is beautiful. It's one of my favorite finales anything.
Yeah.
And so then having this kind of... spin-off series, as they kind of more refer to it now, always felt a bit odd to me, because it never felt like the timing was right.
And again, they talk about it, and I'll be interested to see when they get to that. Obviously it'll be a while now, but I feel exactly the same way, mate. It was very jaggy, and you know, it's not their fault. I think that does happen, and some of the shows
I do think, like, you know, that idea would have been quite good to do about 5-6 years later, not straight away. I think it would have been a better idea to now make that series, and I don't quite understand why they pushed ahead with that.
I don't think they know either, but there you go. But still, yeah, like you said, the finale was super emotional, I thought. Hit all the beats it needed to. It did the thing that, and again, I'm talking about the Friends episode because I just did it. I guess Daisy Edwards brought this out, that in that episode it kind of all the characters go off and you can kind of imagine how their lives pan out after that, And Scrubs did that very well, where it gives us that lovely montage at the end of, like, here's what could happen.
Oh, I just got little goosebumps thinking about that.
Yeah, same. I'm just like, it gives me chills.
Peter Gabriel Book of Love song.
Yeah, it's so sweet. And yeah, and of course, Bill Lawrence, the writer's the guy that takes the little screen down at the end. And it's just like the perfect little button to be like, yep, that's it.
And I know it's like it's quite like a cheesy sitcom move where they kind of like literally bring everyone back, but I really love that bit when they literally bring everyone back in the hallway. Just because at that point you're a sucker for where this series has gone and taken you, and it is just very nice to see everyone and to also kind of have the question of what happened to Tasty Coma Wife addressed by literally her walking through and just going, "You never called."
That's right. Yeah. And one of my favorites, I'm going to try and find him on the cast list.
Is it Hooch Perchance?
Yes.
Phil Lewis.
Phil Lewis, thank you. Yeah, there he is. Yeah, Phil Lewis as Hooch in a straight jacket going, "Hooch is crazy." It's like, yeah. great little gag at the end. So that leads me on nicely to side characters. And I have to say, probably one of my absolute favorites has to be Neil Flynn as janitor.
Yeah, and I like that kind of reception to that character as well, where he does kind of go from this more peripheral character in season one, but then just because everyone clearly responds to this incredibly funny, deadpan, psychotic approach that Neil Flynn gives it. And he's revealed to be the, like, weirder than you ever could have imagined as the whole thing progresses as well.
He has some of the best, like, one of my favorites to date, and you can watch the outtakes of it, they're brilliant, is where he's talking about his shorts and he talks about how his wife made them. She doesn't have so many, she's only got pointer and thumb pinky. I highly encourage people to go and look up the outtakes of that, because it's him and Zach Braff trying to get through that, and there's just obviously like several takes where they both just end up cracking up because it's so ridiculous, but it's so funny.
She just cut off a pair of scrubs and hemmed the bottom. What's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Well, the good Lord didn't bless my wife with all 10 fingers. She's only got pointer and thumb pinky.
Oh, goodness me. And like his taxidermy squirrel army and all that sort of weird stuff that he has going on.
His rabbit that is both a salt shaker and pepper grinder. Drill, fork, I could drill him, fork, mostly fork.
Absolutely.
And I do like going back to Zach Braff's and Donald Faison's podcast, like hearing stories about how it was largely Neil Flynn behind a lot of the improvs that were difficult to get through. And you can picture that. You can really picture that.
Yeah, and it got to the point where the writers would just put, "Neil Flynn will say something funny." They didn't even bother writing for him. They're just like, just point the camera and see what he comes out
with.
He's
got this.
Probably one of my favourite jokes in the entire show is when, when JD accidentally ends up seeing him in the shower, but then feels obliged to tell him that he might have a mole or a growth down below. And so he checks him out, and after he's done checking out, he says, "You know, it seems benign." And he goes, nine and a half.
Yeah.
It's such a stupid, like, adolescent joke to make, but it's very funny.
Yeah.
Just the way he delivers it.
Or just even little bits where, like, there's that whole episode where he's, like, just spends it slumped on the mop because... he's drunk, but what is that? Have you been drinking? And I'm drunk.
Oh, it's brilliant. There's so many. I'm going to be going through YouTube looking all the best moments. Yeah. I'll definitely be splicing in some clips here and there for him. But like you said, the fact that he got to improvise so much on that show, it leads me actually to a point that I've talked about on a few other shows already. Particularly on the likes of Parks and Rec, and I know The Office have the same thing, where there's this really good, it seems, collaboration between the writers and the actors, which makes sense, because often you're bringing in people who are versed in comedy or versed in any... the fact that they just seem to play well off each other, and it was kind of... I get the impression from the behind-the-scenes podcast that no one was being particularly precious or demanding about the lines. It was just like, whatever's funniest, we'll put it in.
Mm-hmm. I also think that, like, they kind of tell stories of how Bill Lawrence would very much let them kind of have a lot of say in the way that their characters were being formed, yeah. particularly in the latter half, the later ends of it, because you have been playing these characters for, like, 6, 7, 8 years. You are going to have quite a good sense of how they would react in certain situations, and that really does come through in a lot of the, like, cause, like, the show does get progressively sillier, I think it's fair to say. Like,
yeah. where
seasons 1 and 2 particularly feel a bit more kind of slightly grimier, slightly edgier than the way that the show does kind of end up being a bit more, even just like the hospital's more brightly lit, and it's there's clearly a little bit more money going into it. But yeah, I think there's still that consistency in the characters, and I think a lot of that comes down to the actors just being, like you say, given that space to feel like they've owned a part of them. Because, like, even Zach Braff said, like, JD isn't that really that far, it's kind of like an amplified version of himself, and that becomes a bit more the case as the show gets further on down the line. And I think a lot of the characters, a lot of the actors with a lot of the characters would probably say a similar thing.
Yeah, that's it. And it makes sense if they're getting more comfortable and they're getting more into the sort of the skin of the character, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to tap into that, don't you?
Yeah.
And I think it's led to some of what end up being the really, really hilarious moments of the show, and you wouldn't have it any other way. You know, mm-hmm. it's brilliant. I've just clocked on, so I've got the cast list up here. Rob Mascio as Todd. Again, another one of my absolute favorites, just for ridiculous high fives and innuendos and just...
Yeah. Who now sells real estate in California, which I love. Imagine buying a house from the Todd.
I know. I think people must do just so they can get a crisp high five.
Yeah, they just like... Offer accepted 5.
No, you didn't.
I did. And now every time I turn around, Dr. Kelso's riding me.
I've got next.
What's up?
No one? Self-5 for the big dog.
And that's one of those things I feel like it can make has made its way a little bit into the pop culture zeitgeist. You know, I've known people to do that. You know,
yeah,
like barbecue 5 or something like that. And as soon as you hear that, you're like, huh, what?
Scrub someone's been.
I will say, one of my best friends, our friendship was born straight off the back of our mutual love of Scrubs. So like it does build friendships.
It definitely does. It's such like a good shorthand of little silly jokes, like even just like shouting eagle at someone is enough to to elicit like quite a good response.
100%. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. And there's so many others from here. I mean, like you said, Sam Lloyd as Ted is just wonderful. Aloma Wright as Nurse Roberts.
Yeah, Laverne's got some very good deadpan drops.
Yeah.
What, you don't have to apologize to me, but you will have to answer to Jesus. Brilliant God-fearing comedy from her.
She has so many great lines, but she also has some like good emotional stuff. I remember the episode, like before, because she sadly her character dies, which is a really powerful episode. But like, even just before, they have this back and forth with her and Dr. Cox.
Yeah, there's a really like quite mature discussion about faith and the nature of it and why it can be important to a lot of people, and the kind of ignorance that can come from people who have a bit more of a staunch view the other way. And then, like you say, it then leads into this really, really emotional episode where she's in a coma and everyone's having to say goodbye. That was an episode like that really got me on the rewatch. Don't know what it was in the lockdown rewatch. I don't remember ever crying at it before, but the moment where Judy, it's fully Judy because Rears, of Judy Rears, her performance where she's saying goodbye is absolutely heartbreaking. She's so good in that beat.
It really, really is. And yeah, she gives some great moments, and then they kind of just sneak her back in as another character.
Yeah, fully knew how I felt about that.
Never addressed.
Yeah.
It's great. And I also want to talk about a little bit about Krista Miller as mm-hmm. Jordan, Bill Lawrence's wife in real life, yeah. I've since learned, and it makes a lot of sense. but she's wonderful, I think, as a kind of foil for Dr. Cox. Like, just as this really strong woman that just doesn't take any of his nonsense, basically, and just calls him out. But yeah. there's a genuine love there.
Yeah, that is one of the, like, again, it's, you kind of have that in-between relationship between the kind of will-they-won't-nays and the steadfast one, and then there's this one that's kind of initially established as a will-they-won't-nay and then just becomes a slightly... they're coupled, but it's a great expression of just kind of how a love can form out of a seemingly mutual disdain for one another, and it's quite fun to see that develop from something that feels quite aggressive to something that is just genuinely quite sweet as they build more of a family and a connection together.
Yeah, it's not the most conventional.
Yeah,
but it's a weird ride
that yeah. relationship arc.
I quite like the was it the one where they realize they've been married and then yeah. like suddenly their relationship starts to break down.
So yeah,
and they're perfectly fine. It's like so weird. But
that's the way
funny.
It works.
Yeah, exactly. We don't question it. But there's lots of other great characters. I'm just scrolling through, and even some of the cast they had on. I mean, they've had people like Elizabeth Banks has been on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was it? I had him here. Ryan Reynolds was on the show for an episode.
Yeah, he was. He's at the end of season two.
Yeah,
it's a so very very good show in terms of the kind of guest appearances that they get in. We've talked a bit about the Brendan Fraser arc that kind of begins in season one and then ends in season three, and that's one of the more successful arcs of the whole series, and largely because of what we've talked about, how touching it is and how funny Brendan Fraser is in within it as well, and also one of the best kind of arcs and guest spots for me is from a fellow Canadian actor, and that's the couple of episodes that Michael J. Fox does Dr. Kevin Casey, the surgeon who has a very extreme OCD. And the way, for people who may not know, Bill Lawrence's first success before Scrubs was Spin City, which was a show that Michael J. Fox was the star of throughout the late 90s. And both of them are really good pals. And Lawrence writes this very, very interesting role for Fox to be able to kind of bring in his experience with Parkinson's and actually allow him to kind of address it in his performance and not have to kind of cut corners and curb an approach to a character. Because I've read a couple of Michael J. Fox's memoirs, and he talks about how that experience of being able to play characters like this really kind of helped him see how he could shift his career in this kind of latter half where he is having more extreme symptoms of Parkinson's. And again, it's like particularly that first episode he's in when JD comes to see him at the end of the episode and he can't stop washing his hands. It's like like some of the best stuff that Michael J. Fox has ever done.
Hey, give me a minute, okay?
No, Kevin, I have to talk to you right now.
Damn it!
Later's cool too.
I'm sorry, I spent the last few days meeting new people and trying to get used to this place, and I'm stressed and I'm fried. And I just want to go home. But here's the punchline. Even though my last surgery was 2 hours ago, I can't stop washing my damn hands.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Look. This is a weak moment. Nobody's supposed to see this. And mark my words, I'll clean up the soap. Probably several thousand times. Everyone's got their own burden, Sadie. And I'm not gonna be one of those people that dumps mine on somebody else. Now, what do you mean?
Yeah, you're right, man. That is one that is just so personal to an actor, and it's,
yeah,
this is what I mean about this show. It's why I always recommend it to people, because it's like, it has some of these really powerful dramatic moments. It's like you said, where the show allows a guy who, you know, famously was experiencing a really horrible illness, and they just said, well, you know, here's a few episodes where you can more or less exercise these demons, as if you will, you know, in front of everybody, and for him to take it and do such an amazing job with it,
yeah,
as his character with OCD. And it's like, it's one of my favorite runs of the whole show. It's so powerful, and it's also kind of funny as well, because he breezes in and like ruffles a few feathers, and it's like, you know, he has a lot of great moments. But yeah, you're right, that's definitely one of the most powerful moments in the show. And one of the I think he's Canadian one of the acts I want to mention is Tom Cavanagh. Is he Canadian?
I think so. Yes,
definitely. I just looked him up. Yeah,
definitely mentioned Tom Cavanagh.
Ontario, Canada.
Look at all the Canadian talent coming through here.
Right. But yeah, he is, he plays Dan, JD's brother. And he's wonderful. He's one of my favorite recurring characters.
Fantastic. Yeah.
You know, that's another one of, you're talking about, you know, stupid high fives, just saying, hey, little brother.
Hey, little brother.
That often gets people's attention.
Yeah.
Very, very funny. And again, has some nice moments. He's, like you said, like a Brendan Fraser, like these other characters that dip in and out as the show goes on.
I've got this episode listed actually as one of the ones that I kind of put a little list of some of my like key favorite episodes.
Oh, please do, yeah.
To bring up, and just on the case of Tom Cavanagh, this was because I assumed we'd probably talk about him because he's so good in it. My favorite episode is that one in season 4, My Cake, when their dad's died, and he comes over and brings a cake to say dad has died.
As for my family, we had our own way of breaking the news.
Hey, little brother.
We did it with cake.
What happened? What, a guy can't take 3 days off work, travel 800 miles on a bus with a double layer fudge cake just to say, hey, how are things?
Dan.
Dad died. There's ice cream in the fridge.
And like, even hearing stories about how that episode shifted, because it was originally written as an episode in which JD's dad would come, was going to guest star, who had been played by John Ritter in earlier seasons, but who himself had like suddenly and tragically passed away. Another great comic actor who's very funny
in his
brief appearances in this show. And yeah, that episode where you know that they, having that context of knowing that they had to quickly rewrite this one to kind of address the fact that they're like a guest actor and kind of friend of a lot of the people involved had passed away, and the way that they do, Matt, I really think that in terms of having to scramble to put something together, they did something that was like quite sensitive, and particularly in the way that they depict the two ways that the brothers get. Accept it, because JD kind of goes a bit numb, and then Dan goes into this complete spiral where he keeps drinking beer in the bathtub.
Dan, you've been in here for like 9 hours. You okay?
Well, I'd feel a lot better if you could give that old H knob there a little twist. Body temp's a bit low. Now I can feel my tootsie.
Again, it's like, it's silly, but there is like quite like a sad kind of truth to that. Reaction to a piece of news like that, but also leads to really funny lines where Dan pops back at the end of the episode and JD just goes, Dan, you're alive, I thought you dissolved. And again, it's just like a key episode of that character as well, who has like quite a nice arc across his appearances throughout the whole thing, where he goes from being a bit of a loser big brother to kind of turning his life around. And JD's reactions to that are often quite interesting. And Kavanagh and Braff work really well together. And they've talked about it on the podcast as well. And it is uncanny how much they look like one another.
that's the thing. It's one of those castings where you're like, hang on, he's not his brother? Or at least a cousin or something? You're like, no, okay. But yeah, it works so well. And it's something that a theme of that, of grief, is like quite predominant in this show, but it handles it so well. I mean, there's an episode later on, I remember in like the eighth season, where I think Carla's like taking this young intern aside and is kind of like saying, look, you're on a bit of a funny path. And then she launches into this story of like, you know, oh, my parents were this and that. And
yeah.
And she goes, oh, heard it. Mm-hmm. And it's like this great little runner of how like, she's like, yeah, everybody here has baggage.
Yeah.
Like everyone's here. And it's true. Like all the characters are written in such a way that like more or less most of them have some issues, you know, mm-hmm. or something they're dealing with, but it's being able to set it aside, you know, and work as a team and help people. And I think that's a really lovely message that they put across throughout the show.
Me, dead mom. JD, dead dad. Elliot, emotionally abusive parents. Dr. Cox, emotionally and physically abusive dead parents, which he may have killed, no one's sure. Look, Katie, now that you're here, it doesn't matter what crap you have in your past. All that matters is that you leave it there. Because this hospital is your home now, and these people are your family. And I can tell you they will love you unconditionally if you let them.
Yeah, definitely. And like we've said, a lot of the more powerful episodes are the ones where they kind of face grief head on and those reactions to grief. And another key episode, and one that often kind of climbs up for me whenever I rewatch it and is up there in the kind of like top three kind of discussion in terms of episodes, is another season 8 one. Episode 2, when JD and Turk decide to cancel steak night to spend the night with the patient who's dying,
yes.
played by Glenn Turman, and they just have a very kind of open discussion about fear of death and what they kind of expect of that kind of moment in their life, and how that as doctors they have a unique relationship to death. And it's just, again, a very well-performed and honest conversation that three very well-written characters have with one another. And that one got me as well.
You're absolutely right, man. I don't know about you, but I felt, because I know the studio changed and everything, well, the eighth season, I thought it was, I kind of thought, well, maybe they'd be done with that kind of stuff now. You know, because season 7 was pretty light for the most part.
Yeah, the writer's strike,
So when they turn around and, like you said, almost straight out of the gate hit you with that one, that was a bit of a surprise. But you're right, it's a fascinating episode.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I for the most part enjoyed that series anyway, but that one that you said in particular, I'm a big fan
of season 8. Big fan. It's one that feels the closest for me in terms of that, particularly the kind of tone of the first two seasons. Like, even on a visual level, they seem to be trying to hark for that again, because it's a little more muted than particularly season 6 and 7, which got quite day glow.
yeah, definitely, man. So what other key episodes have you got listed then? I'm very curious.
Yeah, so the first episode I got, again, I think this is probably, I would probably say that Ben episode's my favorite. And then this one, I think, is probably my next favorite. And it's a very early one, and one for me that kind of really establishes what the show is and in quite that early run. It's the fourth episode of season 1, My Old Lady, where JD, Turk, and Elliot all lose a patient at the same time. And it's about their experiences treating them and kind of forging a connection, and then having to be being unable to save them at the end of the episode. And it is that I'd say, for if anybody wanted to like say what's an episode of Scrubs I should watch to know why this show is so beloved and as it is, I would probably point to that episode because one, it's very funny as well. It has that complete blend of the silly fantasies that, like, and the fantasies are always so well done. They can be huge, kind of look huge in scale, and then you realize that it probably would have taken so long to shoot this like 3-second gag half the time. But then also be able to kind of really come back down to earth and tell stories that are really quite affecting and quite beautiful as well, in the way that, like, they really are characters being forced to address big, heavy themes, and it the show delivers them to you in such a kind of I'm not sure gentle's the right way, but it's like it's quite an effortless means of letting the kind of the tone of it unfold, because it is quite a unique tone that this show strikes that I don't think many other shows kind of touch upon. And I think that episode is like a really great encapsulation of the kind of tone of this show, I would say.
Yeah, it's an interesting pick, but I think you're right. You'd have to pick an episode like that, at least, like you said, something that balances the drama and the humor.
Yeah.
Because that is exactly what that show is all about. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And you're right, it's not always gentle necessarily with it, but
yeah,
that's life, you know. But I think that's probably, again, one of the reasons, like we said earlier, why it's been recognized as being so relatable, you know, also realistic in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
According to most experts, because it's like, well, yeah, those are the kind of emotional beats and things you have to deal with, I'd imagine, being in a hospital, being in that environment. So it's very respectful as well, which is the nice thing. But
yeah,
excellent choices, man. Are there any other episodes on your list? I know we've talked a lot about.
Yeah, there's been a couple here that we've touched upon. Largely that kind of My Lunch season 5 is that episode where Dr. Cox loses the 3 patients after donor. I'd put that up quite high in a contention. I really like the 100th episode, which is a whole Wizard of Oz riff that Zach Braff directed as well. Again, it's like it's a good demonstration of the kind of like ambition that this show often has, particularly in the way it produces gags and kind of does go for big stylistic swings every now and again. It's a good example of that. Another couple of just ones for My Monster from season 2, which is the one that has the needle drop of Dreaming of You when JD and Elliot first get back together in season 2, she's kind of moved out and living in the back of a van, and he's going through a bit of a rut and a dark patch, and they just kind of have a moment where they just both kind of go, screw it, we're just gonna really give in to our passions and our wills here. And that is one of the kind of iconic moments of this Will They Won't They TV pairing, I think, is that Dreaming of You sequence. And another one I really like is the Turk and Carla's wedding at the end of season 3. Yeah. Because Ted's band plays a great cover of 8 Days a Week.
yes, it's absolutely brilliant. I love the like, oh, we haven't played instruments in a while, we might be a bit rusty, and then they're just straight into it, and it's perfect.
Yeah. But again, it's just another example of the show like not kind of doing anything that neatly and making everything a bit messy, because you've got Turk and Carla's wedding not quite going off the plan, and JD's just made Elliot dump Sean for him, and then he's realized he doesn't want to be with her, and he's put her through this kind of horrible emotional roller coaster moment for her. Like, oh, I hate JD in that season. but again, it's like it kind of revels in the messiness that these characters kind of make for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of those, like you said, he takes a while to mature, JD, doesn't he? Takes a while to suss himself out. But yeah, that's one of those episodes, I agree, I cringe. I'm just like, oh, why did you do that? No, it has a pretty good gag where he meets Sean in the bar like 2 days later after he's been broken up, and he's like just fully bearded in hair. Yeah. And he's like, how have you done that? He's like, I'm a quarter Hungarian.
Like, oh. That's a 2-day beard. Sean. Nobody cares, Sean.
That's another line
I'll throw out every now and again without there ever being a Sean around. I'm not sure I've ever met a Sean to be able to throw out, nobody cares, Sean.
Yeah, played wonderfully by Scott Foley. He gets a lot of good stuff in that season, at least season 3.
He does, I think he's quite funny. Particularly that kind of SeaWorld season where he keeps consoling with the white whales that he works with.
Yeah, they said they described on the podcast like one of the best directions he's ever received, which is Sean forlornly rides a dolphin.
Yes.
and you better believe that's what happens.
Yeah. They put it up there.
Absolutely brilliant. I think there's absolutely solid choices, man.
Do you have a favorite season, like yourself?
Oh, I mean, I probably say like season three has a lot going on in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of those arcs, probably tied with four. I feel like those two are when it's really in its stride, and it has a lot of those very complicated storylines between some of the characters, but a lot of emotional heft, like you said. And yeah, the stuff with, like you said, Brendan Fraser and the wedding and all those things are just amazing. It's one of those shows, like you, man, I rewatched it last year, and I could, like all of the sitcoms I'm talking about, and I'm having this every episode I do now, I'm like, oh, I need to go back and watch this show.
Yeah.
So that's going to happen to me a lot, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's fine. It's one of these shows that offers endless rewatch value, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got seasons 1 to 8 on DVD. I'm sure many Scrubs fans are aware, there is that issue where if you ever watch it on TV or on streaming, certain songs won't be in it because of licensing rights. But all the DVDs still have all the original song selections. And for a show that really does kind of specifically pick their songs for really key moments, it does feel like a shame that, like, if you don't have the physical media, then you're not gonna get those really like kind of key moments. And particularly like there, some songs like Josh Roden's Winter, I've like will only ever associate with Scrubs. There's so many songs like that are
100%
like completely beyond, but a part of this kind of DNA of the show.
Yeah, man. And of course, the fun story behind that, which I only learned from listening to the podcast, was that was his first ever song.
Yeah. He'd been trying to be a screenwriter and was like kind of living on people's couches for a bit, but then decided to write a couple of songs. And Zach Braff was his mate and was just like, yeah, this is good, man. Let me take care of the bill.
Yeah. And obviously, and people heard it, and it's such a powerful song for that moment.
Yeah,
it's really, really good. And then, yeah, obviously people heard that and went, well, where's the rest? Where's your EP? You know, and he's like,
uh-oh.
So, but now he's a musician.
Yeah,
goes on full time, which is awesome.
Goes on tours when he can.
Yeah, this is it. So absolutely wonderful, man. So, I mean, Andy, I think we've covered an awful lot, but is there anything else you want to talk about with Scrubs?
I think my kind of like last thoughts on it would be is like in that, like, because I'm sure you're going to talk about a lot of the kind of key American sitcoms, like particularly the last 20 years. And Scrubs for me is the kind of the cream of the crop of that, of a kind of like really, really great period of kind of American sitcoms where you do have the likes of Parks and Rec and 30 Rock and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Broad City and what have you, all coming out within this kind of 20-year period and all being incredible. But there's still nothing quite like Scrubs to me in terms of that definitely balanced and very skillful shifting between incredibly wondrously silly and inventive and kind of really pushing what they can do within a 20-minute episode, both in terms of a visual gag and also in terms of character arc. There's not many shows of its kin that I think kind of come close to the way it manages to walk that tightrope. I do think it's quite unique out of the, particularly that impressive crop of sitcoms of the last 20 years.
Absolutely, man. You're right. I agree. There's nothing else like it, I don't think. So, of all the shows talked about, it's definitely one that feels very, very different. As always, I'd encourage anyone to go and check it out.
Absolutely.
And I agree with you. Normally, I said about the last few shows, you know, oh, it's on Netflix, it's on Prime. This one, I would say, if you can, get hold of the box set.
Particularly if you have a fondness for it and you remember those needle drops and
yeah,
you want to make sure that that kind of memory's intact. Cause I'm not too sure on what kind of some of the substitutes are, but from hearing, well, like, because they've watched some of them back on their own podcast through iTunes, and they've been like, no, where's this song gone? So
I felt the same way, because I started watching it on a streaming service, and that was the same issue that I had, like, I think a half season in. I was like, oh, this is doing my head in. Like, all these poor moments have got... So I just went out to like HMV, found the box set. I was like, yep, I'm buying the box set. It was much better viewing experience. So yeah, highly encourage.
Definitely.
So Andy, I mean, thanks for coming back on, man. I guess all that's really left to say is, where can the good people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at AndyGodian93, and you can also find my podcast, Ramblin' and Amblin' Podcast, that Harley himself has been a guest on in the past for our Back to the Future episode, keeping the Michael J. Fox link alive. you can find that show wherever you listen to your podcasts, and you can also give us a follow on Twitter at Ramblin' Amblin' over there as well. We love to hear from anyone listening, so... yeah, that's where you can find me.
Absolutely. I highly recommend people do that. It's a ton of fun. Like you said, I had a lot of fun talking about Back to the Future because it's one of the greatest films ever made. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff you guys are covering, and there's a huge variety. You know, if anyone goes and looks up the Amblin sort of back catalogue, so to speak, it is nuts how much stuff is on there. So you guys have got a lot of really interesting stuff ahead of you. And I look forward to hearing it. But of course, I'll link all of that in for you, man.
Thank you, buddy. Much appreciated. No, it's been a joy to come back to this. I love the format for this show, and I'll happily talk about anything I love with you.
Brilliant. Cheers, man.
Thanks, buddy.
And there we have it. Thank you so much to Andrew for coming on to the show and talking to me about Scrubs. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. You can go and find Andrew in all of the links I've put in the show notes. You've got his website, you've got his social media, and of course you have Ramblin' and Amblin' Podcast. I cannot recommend that show highly enough, and I'm not just saying that because they were kind enough to have me on an episode. It really is a great show with a great premise. Again, links are in the show notes. Go and check it out. A huge thank you as always to Alex Jenkins for designing the artwork. If you like what you see, definitely hit him up. I've put all of the links in the show notes for you. You can reach out to him, commission your own artwork with him. I can guarantee you will not be disappointed. If you are enjoying the show, then definitely let me know. I would love to hear from you. You can reach me on the links that I've put in the show notes. I've got my social media, you've got my email. It's always nice to hear back from people what they think of the show. Any positive reviews you leave, especially a 5-star, will of course earn you a shout out on the show as well. And I should mention that guest spots are still open for the show. It's pretty much open-ended. At the moment, I have, I believe, 3 left for the sitcom summer series that I'm doing right now. So if you want to jump on board with that, make sure you do so as soon as possible, because those slots will fill up. But of course, afterwards, I'll be back to my usual routine of exploring all kinds of topics through conversations that I have with guests. So if you're sat there listening and you're thinking, I've got a topic that could be really interesting, I've got something I'm super passionate about, don't hesitate to reach out to me. My DMs are open, as they say. You've got my email address. I'm welcome to all sorts of ideas. Just reach out. And who knows, you could become a guest on this show. That's it from me. I'll be back again in a week's time with another sitcom, and I'll leave a little clip in here as a clue, as is now my tradition. So until then, stay tuned and stay safe.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have no midsize available at the moment.
I don't understand. I made a reservation. Do you have my reservation?
Well, yes, we do. Unfortunately, we ran out of cars.
But the reservation keeps the car here. That's why you have the reservations.
I know why we have reservations.
I don't think you do. If you did, I'd have a car. See, you know how to take the reservation, you just don't know how to hold the reservation. And that's really the most important part of the reservation, the holding. Anybody can just take them.